Today is Monday, October 18th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, efforts underway to rescue U.S. kidnapped missionaries in Haiti.
Multiple news outlets said the group was kidnapped by armed gang members in the capital of Port-au-Prince.
Plus, UN warns of growing global food insecurity.
The United Nations warns hunger is on the rise, driven globally by conflict, displacement, climate change, and the economic impacts of COVID-19.
Also, former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell dies. U.S. officials are working with Haitian authorities to secure the release of 12 adults and 5 children with a U.S.-based missionary group who were abducted by a gang notorious for killings, kidnappings, and extortion. Meanwhile, local unions and other organizations expect to launch a strike Monday to protest Haiti's worsening lack of security. The Western Hemisphere's poorest nation is again struggling with a spike in gang-related kidnappings and other crime. The kidnapping of the missionaries come just days after high-level U.S. officials visited Haiti and promised more resources for the national police to help reduce gang violence. The group was kidnapped on a trip to an orphanage, the Ohio-based Christian Aid Missionaries Group said on Sunday. Chris Dingham of Reuters produced this report.
Ohio-based Christian Aid Ministries said on Sunday that 17 of its missionaries, including children, have been kidnapped in Haiti. In a statement, the group said 5 men, 7 women, and 5 children were abducted during a trip to visit an orphanage on Saturday. 16 are Americans and 1 is a Canadian citizen. The Millersburg, Ohio headquarters for Christian Aid Ministries on Sunday appeared to be closed. Multiple news outlets said the group was kidnapped by armed gang members in the capital of Port-au-Prince. Gang violence has surged in the Caribbean nation following the assassination of its president in July and an earthquake in August that killed over 2,000 people. Crises that have displaced thousands and hampered economic activity in the poorest country in the Americas. A U.S. State Department spokesperson told Reuters it was aware of the kidnapping, but did not offer further details.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. The United Nations is warning the fight against world hunger has been lost and calling for action to improve food security for most of the vulnerable people. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In his message marking World Food Day, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres calls for vigorous action and investments in strengthening local food systems. His message comes as nearly a billion people globally do not have enough food. The United Nations warns hunger is on the rise, driven globally by conflict, displacement, climate change, and the economic impacts of COVID-19. Among those most at risk, it says, are refugees and those forcibly displaced within their countries by conflict. The UN acknowledges its goal of eliminating world hunger by 2030 will likely not be met. Guterres says almost 40% of the world's population, 3 billion people, cannot afford a healthy diet. That, he says, is causing undernourishment in the form of both malnutrition and obesity to proliferate globally.
The pandemic has left an additional 140 million people unable to access the food they need. At the same time, the way we produce, consume, and waste food is taking a heavy toll on our planet. It is putting historic pressure on our natural resources, climate, and natural environment, and costing us trillions of dollars a year.
World Food Day marks the anniversary of the founding of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, which was established on October 16, 1945, in Quebec, Canada. FAO Senior Program Officer in Geneva, Patrick Jacquesson, says more than 150 countries hold special events every year in observance of the day. He says this year's theme calls for the transformation of agri-food systems to provide enough affordable and nutritious food to people everywhere.
With an ever-growing population, expected to reach 10 billion by 2050, we need to feed the world and nurture the planet. It is not just about responding to emergencies, it is about building longer-term resilience and changing how we produce and consume food.
The FAO recommends development of diverse agricultural systems, which it says are more adaptable to climate change and other shocks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At an emergency conference, the European Union pledged more than $1 billion in humanitarian aid to Afghanistan and neighboring countries, as the United Nations warns millions of Afghans are facing famine. But the United States have been cautious, saying it is sending help but cannot provide funds directly to the Taliban-led government until it starts respecting human rights and women's rights. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
The situation in Afghanistan is dire, especially for children. This week, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on the world to take immediate action and inject liquidity into the Afghan economy to avoid collapse.
The Afghan people cannot suffer a collective punishment because the Taliban misbehave. People should not die of hunger in any circumstance.
The European Union pledged more than $1 billion in new humanitarian aid to Afghanistan at an emergency virtual conference. The U.S. has approved nearly $64 million in recent weeks. Reporters asked State Department spokesperson Ned Price if the U.S. is prepared to do more.
So we are, of course, not in a position to provide financial support to the Taliban or any future Afghan government until and unless we see to it that these core requirements are being met and the rights of the people of Afghanistan are being fully respected and enforced.
In a VOA interview, a Taliban deputy minister called on the U.S. and other countries to unfreeze Afghan assets held abroad.
Freezing Afghanistan's assets is an injustice toward the people of Afghanistan. We are negotiating with the Americans. We are also negotiating with other countries and the international banks to release this money because it belongs to the Afghan people. This is the Afghan people's bread and butter. And releasing this money is crucial to solving the economic problems of the Afghan population.
Withholding direct aid and freezing assets are having an impact on the Afghan economy. William Byrd of the U.S. Institute of Peace told VOA.
I mean, the real problem with asset freeze is it stopped the flow of any foreign currency banknotes into the country. So everybody is being constrained by just the lack of money supply. And paradoxically, also, the new Afghan government can't actually print any money because that was also printed abroad.
Some Afghans are lining up at banks to withdraw some of their money, as Michael Kugelman explains.
As a result, banks now have much less money than they had had in previous years, which has been one of the big concerns that, you know, you have huge lines to get to access money in banks when the Taliban even allows banks to be open.
With salaries not being paid and food scarce in many areas, some Afghans are trying to cross the border to Iran, with many being caught and sent back. Experts tell VOA if the humanitarian situation does not improve, millions of Afghans will likely try to flee. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
International aid agencies are working to help resettle millions of people in Afghanistan who were displaced during the war. VOA's Ayesha Tanzin spoke with some of those who are living in a Kabul camp.
With tears in her eyes, this woman in a Kabul camp speaks of the horrors of life as a displaced person, compounded by abject poverty.
I want to scream at the top of my lungs. Please come and see my situation. A snake bit my husband. I begged in Kabul for 3 months to treat him.
According to UNHCR, over 500,000 people were forced to flee their homes due to war this year. Many of them came to the capital, Kabul. Now that the fighting is over, international humanitarian organizations are trying to find ways to send them back home. The Taliban official in charge of the effort seemed eager to show progress and drove the VOA team in his car.
Taliban government is trying to send home all the people who came to Kabul from other provinces. We have requested a lot of NGOs, philanthropists, businessmen to help us. So far, more than 40 organizations are working with us. Only with their help can we send these people back.
But with their houses destroyed by war, many say they have nothing to return home to and no way to support themselves.
I have no one at home. My two sons have been killed. It's just me and my daughter now. Winter is coming and we have nothing. No wood to burn, no coal, no money to buy anything.
In the camp, children huddled together waiting for food. Steam blows from a large kettle. UN agencies say 80% of the internally displaced people since the month of May are women and children, many of whom need aid urgently. The international community has not yet recognized the Taliban as a government, but it appears that when it comes to aid, working with Taliban authorities may be inevitable.
Political differences between Taliban and the international community notwithstanding, humanitarian assistance to vulnerable Afghans is one area where the two are trying to work together. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
Ali Habi Ali, the son of an ex-media advisor to a former prime minister of Somalia, has been arrested by British police under anti-terrorism laws following the killing of a lawmaker, David Ames, a source close to the investigation and British media said. Gloria Saw of Reuters reports.
British police have arrested a suspect in the murder of lawmaker David Amos, according to local media and a source close to the investigation. Ali Harbi Ali, the son of a former media advisor to a Somali prime minister, was arrested under anti-terrorism laws following the killing of Amos. A lawmaker in British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party, Amos was stabbed repeatedly while meeting constituency voters on Friday in a town east of London. Police said they arrested a 25-year-old British man at the scene on suspicion of murder and believe he acted alone. A British source close to the investigation later named Ali as the detained suspect. Ali's father told the Sunday Times that his son had been arrested in connection with the murder and in an email to Reuters called the situation unprecedented and horrific. He added, quote, "Due to the ongoing early investigation, I am obliged and commanded not to talk about it." British police searched an address linked to Ali in North London on Sunday. In a statement released via London police, Amos's family said they were absolutely broken, but asked people to, quote, "set aside hatred and work towards togetherness. Whatever one's race, religious, or political beliefs, be tolerant and try to understand." The killing comes 5 years after the murder of Joe Cox, a lawmaker from the opposition Labour Party, and has prompted a review of politician security.
That's Gloria Saw of Reuters. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will lead tributes in Parliament to David Ames, a Conservative lawmaker stabbed to death as he met constituents. The attack shocked Britain, and it has fueled concern about politicians' safety and the level of vitriol directed at them. It came 5 years after Labour Party lawmaker Joe Cox was killed by a far-right extremist. The House of Commons returns Monday from a three-week break, and most of the scheduled businesses has been replaced by tributes to Ames. Colin Powell, former Joint Chiefs Chairman and Secretary of State, has died from COVID-19 complications, his family said on Monday. He was 84. In an announcement on social media, the family said Powell had been fully vaccinated. Quote, "We have lost a remarkable and loving husband, father and grandfather, and a great American," unquote, the family said. Powell was the first African-American to serve as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of State. Powell left behind an indelible reputation as a straight shooter who considered, then rejected a run for the presidency. This is the Voice of America. China's economy hit its lowest pace of growth in a year in the third quarter hurt by power shortages, supply chain bottlenecks, and a major wobble in the property market, and raising pressure on policymakers to do more to prop up the faltering recovery. Data released on Monday showed gross domestic product, GDP, grew 4.9% in July and September from a year earlier, the weakest clip since the third quarter of 2020, and missing forecasts. Despite a drop in growth, the government says it is confident that target will be met. Three activists protesting human rights abuses in China have broken into the archaeological site where the flame lightning ceremony of the 2022 Beijing Winter Games has been held, and ran towards the Temple of Hera, holding a banner that read, quote, "No genocide games," unquote. The protesters climbed over a fence to enter the grounds and attempted to reach the area where the ceremony was being held. They were thrown to the ground by police and detained. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinero for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The United Nations is calling for a ceasefire in the key Yemeni city of Marib to allow civilians wounded in fighting to receive emergency medical care. Again, Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
The battle for Marib reportedly is still raging between the Saudi-backed Yemeni government and Houthi rebels supported by Iran. The Houthis have made major gains in seizing control of Marib, the government's last stronghold in northern Yemen. UN officials say the intensity of the fighting is taking a severe toll on the civilian population. Spokesman for the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Laerke, says about 35,000 people are essentially trapped in the battle zone. He says their movements in and out of the district are severely restricted.
This inability to move in and out has limited the delivery of life-saving aid and prevented the sick and wounded from receiving medical care. The provision of basic commodities has become exceedingly difficult and dangerous. The United Nations and its partners remain committed to working with all relevant authorities to ensure that assistance continues to reach people in need despite the clashes.
Laerke says the UN coordinator in Yemen is calling for a ceasefire in the Al-Abdiya district in Marib to allow safe passage of civilians and aid workers. He says it is critical that those wounded in the fighting be evacuated so they can receive medical care.
So this is a very specific request for a localized ceasefire in this district in Marib, because the situation is extremely critical and people's lives are in immediate danger. Those who have been wounded in the fighting, which has been going on for quite some time, do not have access to the health care that they need. They can't get out, and the aid that we need to get in can't get in.
The OCHA says 235 civilians were killed or injured last month across Yemen, the second highest monthly casualty figure in 2 years. Also last month, it says fighting near Marib displaced an estimated 10,000 people. The United Nations calls Yemen, which is in its seventh year of war, the world's worst humanitarian crisis. It says 80% of the population, 24 million people, depend on international aid for survival. It adds hunger is widespread, with nearly 5 million people on the verge of famine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The two-day storm in Athens killed a 70-year-old farmer whose car was washed away as he was rushing to tend to his herd of sheep. Dozens of other people, including tourists, were rescued in the floodwater that destroyed hundreds of homes and businesses. Anthi Karasava reports on how the storm has exposed major infrastructure failings in Europe's oldest city.
Roads turned into rivers, homes and apartment blocks collapsed like decks of cards, and dozens of children at a school in Athens were ordered to stand on their desks to be saved as floodwaters surged into their campus and classrooms like a tsunami. Last week's two-day storm is the latest environmental calamity to hit Greece after devastating fires razed thousands of hectares of forest just 2 months ago, threatening even the nation's capital. And yet it is Athens once more, Europe's oldest metropolis, and its 5 million residents who find themselves hardest hit, reeling again because of long-standing flaws in infrastructure and urban planning that authorities have failed to remedy as the ancient city, they say, has pushed its way aggressively into modernity. Speaking to a local broadcaster, Yorgos Patoulis, the governor of the greater region of Athens, acknowledged the deficiencies, but said he could not be held accountable for decades of problems related to the capital's urban planning. The anger and despair are so intense this time around that an Athens prosecutor has singled out a near-deadly incident, ordering an urgent investigation, hoping to spark action from authorities. The case involves dozens of commuters, including children, who were traveling in a bus. The vehicle was immobilized by water that engulfed an underpass on a main motorway, nearly submerging the vehicle and its passengers not far from the center of Athens. Critics have long blamed what they describe as the capital's anarchic planning and years of infrastructure failings that have seen streams that once snaked down the hills of this ancient capital and its surrounding plains blocked and cemented, turned into motorways, streets, or even parking lots instead. Without the creation of proper drainage, even the lightest downpour here leads to flooding. After devastating fires in August, raised forests that ring the capital were not cleared, pushing trunks and tons of debris into already clogged drains across Athens, as one local complained to a television network. I've never seen these drains cleared by anyone for as long as I know, the woman says. Look at them, she adds, standing just centimeters away from where the bus became stuck. She says the drains are clogged with sticks, stones, garbage, and tons of masks. Similar complaints about a lack of infrastructure and state response have poured in from all parts of this country. Dimitris Stanitsas, the mayor of Ithaki, says his island would have been swallowed by floodwaters had local crews not moved to shatter pavements and roadblocks to allow waters gushing through roads and side streets into the sea. The state has to finally take interest and undertake vital infrastructure projects to better shield its people and the country as a whole, he said. State spending was cut dramatically during a 10-year recession, leaving key development works either idle or incomplete. Among them, a state-of-the-art drainage system close to where the bus and its passengers nearly drowned. The sweeping destruction caused by the storm has sparked fierce debate, with a blame game played out among state, local authorities and construction companies. But with the fallout of climate change already obvious, experts like Evthymios Lekas, a professor specializing in natural disasters, say the blame game is diverting attention from what has to happen, rapid state reaction. It's no longer about climate change, he says. He adds, we are living a climate crisis, and phenomena like these are going to be so much more common. If Greece and its capital are to be shielded, then they have to be fitted with proper infrastructure. Government officials contacted by VOA were not available for comment. Anthika Rasava for VOA News, Athens.
Russia's total number of coronavirus infections has topped 8 million, and the daily infection toll hit a new record. The National Coronavirus Task Force said Monday that 34,325 new infections over the past day raised the pandemic total to 8,027,012. That figure represents more than 5% of the population. The task force also said 998 people died of COVID-19 in the previous day. It brings the total number of deaths to 224,310. The death toll is minutely lower than the record 1,002 tallied on Saturday. But it shows how the country is continuing to struggle with the virus as vaccination rates remain low. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.